is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
We are live today at the Pint, 109th and Jasper, Edmonton Sports Radio, Team 1260. And I think it's 1-0 for Montreal. Okay. And that's still in the first period. By the way, you know, we're having a lot of fun down here. Lots of people coming by. That's terrific to see. I know a lot of our thoughts today are with the folks in Japan and the Asia Pacific with the earthquake and tsunami. You know, our prayers go out to those folks. And I know Edmonton being a very generous city as it is, and Alberta specifically, that lots of people will want to contribute. You can go online to the team1260.com. We have a place where you can click on and donate through the Canadian Red Cross and their relief efforts. And you know what? I know whenever the need is there, Edmontonians respond, and definitely the need is there in this particular case. Jonathan Willis joins us now from OilersNation.com. Jonathan, how are you?
I'm doing great, Alan. How are you?
Good. You wrote three articles today that I want to talk to you a little bit about. The first one is on Colton Tubert. You talked. You mentioned in the article that most estimates for Tubert have him as an NHL depth player, and I know that somebody had tweeted, the organization had said that he'd be a number five guy. Math does not lend itself to that type of player very well. He's not an offensive sort of a guy. How do you see him being used in the NHL? Do you see him as a PK guy or just an even strength kind of 5'6" Scott Ferguson type?
I expect he'll be a penalty killer, just because that kind of a player with that kind of physical skills, with a defensive mindset, even in the 5'6" role, almost always ends up being used on the penalty killing unit. I know math doesn't. I totally agree with you that it's difficult to project defensive defensemen, but I think the big indicator for an American Hockey League defenseman is how he's being used, and from what we can tell, it looks to me like Colton Tubert hasn't been used as a top pairing defender most of the time in the AHL, which is something you'd really like to see from a guy who's close to NHL ready. We don't know how he'll progress, but it's difficult to see him stepping in immediately when he's not an impact defenseman in the American League.
Right. He was playing on a very deep team with the LA Kings minor league system, and I know that in his first few games with the Oklahoma City Barons, he's had more of an impact both offensively and on the PK. He's 5 games, 2 goals, and an assist, and a +2. Do you see the Oilers possibly using him more offensively just out of need at the minor league level?
I think it's probably too early to say that. They do have a number of other options with Chorney out and Petry recalled to the big club. They're somewhat limited, but they still have players like Brian Helmer and Kevin Montgomery who they added at the deadline. So I think time will tell with Tubert. It's possible they'll use him in that role, especially with the kind of start he's had in Oklahoma, but I don't know if we'll see him stay in that role based on his history.
The main issue that I think most people had with the Tubert trade, the Penner part of that, was that type of player, that sort of role player, is somewhat readily available. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree that you're not going to get anything you can't find on the open market in Colton Tubert.
Another item you posted on ON talked about Linus Omark, and I found it very interesting because you had what jumped out at me was that you feel he might be a high-percentage shooter. Can you give me the background there and why you feel that way?
Well, the thing with Linus Omark is that he has a track record of scoring goals, and shooting percentage is actually something I've been worried about with him at various other levels. He's played in the Swedish Elite League, the top league in Russia, the KHL, as well as the American Hockey League. And in all those leagues, he was a guy who converted a high percentage of his shots. Now, sometimes what happens with a high shooting percentage player is that they're on a tear, they're on a really good run, and they're unable to replicate it. But in Omark's case, we have 3 or 4 years of data that suggests, at least at these lower levels, that he's a very good shooter. He's got a very good shot. And we haven't really seen that so far at the NHL level. Right now, his shooting percentage is quite low, and there's at least some reason for optimism that he can improve upon his number so far, because right now he's at Patrick O'Sullivan levels.
And you mentioned as well that he had a good, or at least decent, Corsi number But his plus minus wasn't good, and the culprit appears to be save percentage behind him, right?
Yeah, and that's something that we saw last year with Sean Horkoff, where the team wasn't really getting brutally outshot with him on the ice, but a lot of those pucks had a tendency to go in, and this year it's been the opposite. He's getting shot at by about the same rate, but the pucks are not going in the net. I think last year he was a 880 save percentage on the ice, and this year he's up around 930. So that's something that fluctuates wildly from year to year, and I think it's one of the reasons we need to take Omark's plus-minus with a grain of salt.
So it, because of the fact that it'll go back to the median, the odds are that, he'll be, his plus-minus will be more representative of his overall play next year. You did a really nice overview of the value of a draft pick on Oilers Nation this week. And I like the story because you called in three or four different studies and came up with several really interesting conclusions. You say top five overall is gold. How often does a top five pick end up going sideways?
It does happen, particularly in weaker drafts. I think we can all think of names, a guy like Pavel Brendl or a guy like Patrick Stefan. In years where the same level of quality isn't there in the top five picks, but in most years, those top five picks are so much better and have such a higher degree of not only turning out as NHL players, but turning out as impact players, that if a team can move up into that range, it's almost always worth it. And that might sound pretty obvious. Obviously, everybody wants a higher draft pick, but that elite talent we've seen is almost always clustered at the very top.
Your next point runs counterintuitively to Oilers fans who saw the Edmonton Oilers trade down, lose out on Zach Parise and others, pick up Mark Pouliot and J.F. Jacques in the deal. But your research says that after the top five, moving down in the first round is a good idea.
Yeah, as a rule, because the thing is there's a steep drop-off from the talent available in the top five picks to the rest of the first round. But between the 15th and 30th spots in the first round, there is a slight drop-off, but it's very, very minimal in comparison. And that's been shown in various studies. I was inspired by Jason Greger's work to look into this a little bit more, but three or four different people have looked at this, and they've all come to the same basic conclusion that the drop-off between 15th and 30th is not nearly as great as it is at the top end of the draft. And just to address the Pouliot issue, I think the thing we forget with that sometimes is that the Oilers were really targeting Robert Nilsson, and he went one pick before the Oilers traded down, and when that player left, they thought, well, we can trade down now because the guy we want isn't there. So if he hadn't been selected at 16, if Zach Parise had been selected at 16, we'd have taken a very different lesson from that, that it would have been wise to trade down rather than take Nilsson at 17.
Very good point. And outside the first round through 100, you're dealing in a all picks are not equal, but if you can pick up two in the 50s for one in the 40s, that's a good deal, right?
Absolutely. The difference, and I was really surprised to see this because I thought we'd see a fairly steady drop all the way down, but the difference between a fifth round pick and even an old eighth or ninth round pick, of course the draft only goes seven rounds now, but the difference is it's almost non-existent. In fact, over the last few years, I think the tendency has been that the fifth round has been outperformed by the sixth round. And because the gap is so narrow, I think the real objective here should be to get quantity of picks rather than quality of picks. If you can trade a fifth round pick for a sixth and a seventh round pick, you should do it every time.
And your article at ON had one more item that I found very interesting, because it seems as though the National Hockey League does this naturally, but you drove it home vehemently, and it makes sense. If you're a team looking for added depth, and I think always of Buffalo in the spring of 2006 who ran out of defensemen, that's why they lost in the conference finals to Carolina. If you're thinking of adding depth and it's a pick outside the top 100, make the deal 100 times out of 100, right?
Yes, absolutely. There's no reason any team that thinks they can contend or even thinks they can go on a decent run should hang on to a depth draft pick over a veteran. The thing is, you can find the kind of players that those draft picks turn into in the open market very cheaply, and you have a very limited window to win in the NHL. So if you can trade one of these really long shot lottery scratching win ticket type picks for an actual NHL player who's going to help you win, you have to do it every single time.
An email here from Steve from Calgary. He said, this may be a good question for Jonathan Willis. I've read many articles on websites and Oilers Nation recently and in previous years about quantifying the value of a draft pick. All of these articles seem to measure the success of a draft pick in terms of the player reaching the NHL level to some extent. Do you think a late round pick, say a fourth or later, could be considered a success if that player becomes a solid AHL player, temporary NHL call-up? And do you think an NHL team would consider that a successful pick, or is the NHL the only measure of success for a draft pick?
I think they should consider that a successful pick, no question. A player like that, the odds of them turning into somebody useful are quite low. So a player that can play regularly in the American Hockey League, can act as depth and an injury call-up, that's very valuable. And just to go a little further with that, it's part of the reason I think teams should really push for boomer bust selections later in the draft. Because if you can get a player who has a one in 20 chance at turning, as opposed to a player who's got a 1 in 10 chance at turning into a depth player, always go with the good player, because those depth players are so easily replaceable in the open market.
So take Niinimaki just at 115 instead of number 15.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oilers pick at number 1. If you had to predict right now who they'll take, what would the name be?
I think they'll take Adam Larson. Yeah. I don't really have much to back that up, but I have difficulty seeing them take Nugent Hopkins. I think they're so set on the wings that they'll have trouble taking Landeskog. So for drafting for need, it's either Sean Couturier or Adam Larson. And based on what all the scouts are saying, I have to think it's going to be Larson.
Jonathan, thanks for this. And you're in town next weekend, right?
I am indeed.
Okay, we'll have you on live on the show then, if we can arrange that. Thanks very much, Jonathan.
Thanks so much, Alan. Always a pleasure.
Jonathan from Oilers Nation, Jonathan Willis, and various other sites. He writes some absolutely astounding stuff. If you haven't read him before, drop by. And usually two or three a week that are really insightful and make you think. Coming up in the next hour, we've got three very interesting guests. Kurt Ludeke from the Bruins Draft Watch 2011 will talk about the Zdeno Chara hit and a couple of other items that involve the Bruins, plus the 2011 draft. And also we'll get to Jim Beyer from the Oklahoma City Barons. He's their play-by-play guy. We'll get some updates on people like Hardikainen and others. And coming up after 1 o'clock, Jeff Kreshel from the Crush Health Show, coming up.